These days, everyone who has a mobile device can take great photos and shoot videos, showing up all the time on Flickr, Instagram, Facebook, and a host of other social media sites. You point your phone and shoot a picture. Sometimes it's a hit, and many times it's a miss. So what separates the amateurs from the pros? For over 125 years, Dodd Camera has assisted photographers, both professional and amateur, with state-of-the-art cameras, lenses, lighting and darkroom equipment, and class instruction. You can learn about new equipment from their blog or attend one of the many in-store events. The folks at Dodd Camera are helpful, professional, and experienced. They'll take the time to answer your questions and give you advice you can use. You may go to doddcamera.com to find out more. And finally, we wish to thank Dodd Camera for sponsoring the Outspoken Cyclist podcast.
Time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for May 12th, 2018. It isn't often that I recognize milestones as they approach. I'm ordinarily ordinary and spend a lot of the time in the moment. For some reason, I often find it difficult to look back. Today, however, is a special occasion, and I feel the need to celebrate it and celebrate it with you. Today is the 400th episode of The Outspoken Cyclist. I was recently asked about the show, how it started, how I find my guests, who were some of my most memorable interviews. So I had to take a long view back, and here are a few thoughts I have about it. I was first asked to be the host of a weekly radio show at an AM shock jock talk station in Youngstown, Ohio, in the spring of 2010. I had less than zero knowledge of radio broadcasting other than the fact that I listened to NPR. I was, however, lucky enough to be paired with a guy who was an industry veteran, and his guidance gave me some real solid basics. I think the real advantage to the longevity of the show has been the decades of history I have within the bicycle industry on a variety of levels, and most people haven't turned me down for a conversation, although a few have. So when the gig in Youngstown was over, it was a fast and not too painful transition to non-commercial radio at WJCU with another veteran, Greg Priddy. He really schooled me well with what I could and couldn't say or do on the air, and he was and is a great sound engineer and producer, and I was able to focus on the guests and the topics. Greg and I parted ways for a variety of reasons, but he didn't leave me dangling in the wind and continued to offer his expertise in technical production until about a year and a half ago. I then learned to take over the recording, and eventually I've taken over the production too. It ain't always perfect, but it's always the best I can muster each week. Brian will be the first to tell you that I've often said, "I'm done. I can't do this anymore," when I'm having a particularly difficult time putting together a show or finding a sound quality that's difficult to perfect with everybody using mobile phones. And then a guest or a listener or a colleague will make a comment or inspire me or teach me something I didn't know, and that desire to keep the show on the air is once again rekindled. This may have been the long way around, but I'm humbled and grateful for all those who have graciously taken time to talk with me, to download the show each week, to comment on specific interviews, and to offer up suggestions and connect me with potential guests. I want to thank you for your support and your interest. I hope you keep listening, commenting, and enjoying the show. So let's get to this week's guests. You all know that I love talking with frame builders. Up until this week, however, I haven't had the opportunity to talk with a woman frame builder. But tonight's the night. Julie Petalino is actually a Cleveland native. In fact, just before we went on air for our conversation, I learned that we have a very personal connection. Julie's grandfather, Tony, and I have known each other for almost 40 years. He was an avid cyclist in the day and a client. But it gets even better, or maybe worse. Julie was in Cleveland this week and only found my invite to be on the show when she returned home to Kansas. Oh well, she accepted the invite and our conversation is first up. Julie is a fine artist and graphic designer by education. And then she found frame building. Wrapping her artistic expertise into the craft of hand building frames seems to round out her creative necessities. With only less than 4 years of experience, Julie has already honed the process that translates her designs into the intricate lugs she brazes into her frames. The results are exquisite. We talk about her background, her work, and of course her favorite food, music, and pets. After a break, we talk with Dr. Norm Howes. His connection to cycling goes back more than 5 decades when, as a teenager, he took a cross-country bike trip that transformed his life. In the ensuing years, he's raced bicycles, became a doctor, he coached dozens of Indy Little 500 teams, and takes youngsters on long, long bicycle tours every summer. So here's my conversation with Julie Petalino. Hi, Julie. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thank you for joining me on this special episode. I couldn't be more pleased to speak with you, and now we have a new connection.
Yeah, thank you so much, Diane. I'm thrilled to be here and talk with you today.
Just for my listeners, Julie and I were chatting, which I always do with my guests before we get started actually having this conversation that you can hear. And we found out that Julie's grandfather and I have known each other for 40 years. And Julie was just here in Northeast Ohio, and now she's back in Kansas. But we're going to talk anyway. So, woman frame builder. I love it.
Yeah.
Tell us about your background.
Okay. I come from a fine arts background. I got my undergrad in Chicago at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. And I've sort of always known my whole life that I've wanted to be creative and do something creative and make as my career. But I couldn't quite ever figure out what that was or how that looked until I stumbled upon frame building. And I really think for me that the big difference was, in the end, a bicycle is a tool. It's functional. It serves a purpose. It can transform your life and literally take you somewhere, whereas a drawing and a painting, sure, you can have an emotional reaction to it, but it doesn't have that same sort of functional aspect that the bicycle does. And so that's what I needed to stay engaged.
It's obvious you've brought your artistic qualities to frame building. You build some frames that are visually so stunning. I've never seen anything quite like it. And you've worked with some pretty prominent builders and learned a lot of intricate skills. What did you find was the most daunting skill that you needed to master after you left art school and started doing this?
Well, first of all, thank you for all your kind words and compliments. It really means a lot that my work is making an impact and that people are interested in what I'm doing. So that's super exciting to hear. So I think that one of the hardest things for me, to be frank, is starting from absolute zero with this. I used to ride bikes as a kid, but, you know, I never hung around the bike shops. I didn't really know much about components and how things come together. So it's been a really big learning curve, just learning about all the ins and outs of bikes and bike parts and what works together, what doesn't work together, what do you need to think about. That's been pretty tough. But I'm getting there little by little.
You're using some very sophisticated equipment. Are you doing your designs through a CAD system?
I am, yeah. So I start everything in CAD, and then I move on. If I'm going to be doing any machining, I'll take those parts from CAD into what they call CAM software, computer-aided machining. And then from there, I'll put that on the machine. So the the CNC part has been another really big learning curve. They don't really teach you that in art school.
No, I guess not. I think that, that would be, maybe you need to go get an engineering degree, and that's a joke. I did not mean that.
No, it was a super valid point, and this is the kind of thing that I would have learned in that type of schooling. And sometimes I wonder if I hadn't gone to the fine art school, if I would have done something like this, I might have been really happy with it. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot to learn. If there was a sort of quick and easy way to take some classes and do it, I would. But I'm really blessed to have local mentors here who have been amazing, helping me get started with it, and still continue to this day. They give me lots of hope and work through it all. It would have been impossible on my own.
How long have you been building frames?
I've been building frames for 3-4 years now.
Wow, you've come a long way in that period of time, because there's a lot of press that already goes back 3 years.
Yeah, I think the first press I got was when I went to NABS, and that was with my third frame. So, no, I've been so lucky to get the attention that I have, and I feel very blessed because of that.
Well, you call it luck. You know, there's some skill and some, you have that artistic eye. And I think that what draws people to your work is that visual impact. And it's really, really stunning. Some of the detailing is just, I've never seen anything like it. Tell us a little bit about the way you create some of this ornate lug work that appears mm-hmm. in your frames.
Okay. Well, I start off by talking to my client, or if it's a bike for me, thinking about some sort of idea that I want to explore or they want to explore. And then from there, I'll come up with ideas, drawings, flat, you know, pen and paper kind of drawings. And then once we are happy with where the concept is going, I'll take that into CAD and build a 3D model of it. So what I like to do is start with a flat drawing, and then in CAD I can take that flat drawing and wrap it into a cylindrical form. And then once I've got that, then I can do all the programming and modeling and whatnot that I need to do to make the lugs. And right now they're all cut on my CNC milling machine using what they call a rotary fourth axis. So the tube rotates and the cutter moves around. It's actually pretty darn cool.
So you program it first to do what you want it to do.
Yeah. I started out doing all of this by hand cutting with a jeweler saw and some files. So to be moving onto the machine is a pretty big deal, and it saves a lot of time, and it also gives me even more creative freedom, because I'm not limited by, what can I cut by hand?
Oh, okay. Okay, I get it. So that you can actually let your imagination go crazy with the design and feed
exactly.
that into the machine and not have to think about, okay, if I cut this little piece off, it's going to ruin the whole thing, right? With my...
Right. Yeah, exactly. Or, you know, can I actually fit my file into that tiny area, or, you know, how am I going to maneuver the saw so I can cut this one spot? So it's much better this way.
Let me remind our listeners, I'm speaking with Julie Petalino. She is a custom frame builder out of Lenexa, Kansas. And is it warm today there?
Yeah, it's warm. It's looking like maybe we might have some rain. I'm not sure. Hmm. But yeah, we're definitely full on into summer, it feels like.
Yeah, I just spoke with somebody who's in Indiana. He says it's 85 and sunny. And I'm like, what happened? It was beautiful yesterday. It's in the 40s here. It's so cold. And you just left here.
You're kidding. Yeah, it was gorgeous last week.
Yeah, well, you took the good weather with you. So,
oh, I'm so sorry.
Do you build your own wheels and forks?
I don't build my own wheels. I do build my own forks.
So you use steel forks for most of your bike?
It depends on the frame. Some people are really into the carbon. They want the weight savings. They want the stiffness. So I will build with carbon if it's requested. I sort of prefer steel because it gives me more options as far as my geometry goes.
Right.
And certainly if it's a smaller frame, for a smaller rider, you almost have to build your own fork in order for the frame to be making any kind of sense.
So you are building, you're not building your frames out of carbon though, are you?
No, it's all steel.
What kind of steel are you using? Who's steel?
I like Columbus.
Yeah.
And I was using True Temper, but sadly that's no longer an option, so I've switched over to Columbus. I haven't had the chance to try Reynolds yet, but I'm not against it. It's just, you know, I'm comfortable with Columbus. It's easy to get.
Right.
So that's what I've been using.
So I guess you're brazing, or are you, or, well, fillet brazing, so you're using brass or silver?
I'm using both.
Okay.
So for the bilaminate lugs, the fancy lug bikes, those are sleeves that are silver brazed onto the tubes, and then I'll fillet braze the tubes together. But if there's no sleeves or anything like that, it's all just brass brazing.
Got it.
So I want to talk a little bit about fit, because that's mm-hmm. my background. I have a lot of years and years and years of fit. How do you approach fit and geometry to accommodate fit, especially if you're building a small frame? What do you need the person there? How are you working with your clients?
So far, I've had local clients, so everyone does come here for a fitting. Well, what I'll do is take some body measurements, and then I have a Waterford Fitmaster. It's sort of an adjustable bike, and then we'll mock up the geometry that I think would work for them on that bike, and then we'll do kind of a test ride on it and tweak it from there. So technically what I'm doing is more like sizing, and then fitting would come after the frame is assembled, and, you know, you do the little micro adjustments to the saddle and the pedals and whatnot. But we're going to get them real close with just a proper sizing. I'm starting to get more interest from out-of-town clients, and in that case, I'm just hoping to build a network of fitters who I can trust and have them go to those people and get their body measurements.
I like that. I like that idea. I think that's a great idea. Well, somebody actually looking at the person, even though you take measurements, sometimes you put somebody on a trainer or a fit machine and you find out that, wow, they had a hip replaced or a knee operation, or their ankle doesn't work correctly. And it doesn't show up necessarily in just measurements. Right.
Yeah.
So who's your average client? Who is the person for whom you're building bikes these days?
You know, Diane, I haven't been doing this awful long, so I don't know that I have an average client or an average bike. It's been pretty varied so far. I mean, I think a lot of my beginning bikes, they were for me and for people who didn't mind being little test hamsters.
So, guinea hamsters.
Yeah. I've made bikes for people, you know, women my age. I've made some for some of the more fast guy types. Yeah, it's pretty varied right now. Pretty varied.
Is there a specific type of frame that's more popular right now than others? So what are you mainly building? What are people asking for?
I get a lot of interest in the gravel frames, the sort of all-road adventure. It's real big out here, the gravel. So everyone's wanting to put in the big fat tires and things like that and be able to go out and do the gravel races.
Which takes us to disc brakes.
Yes.
How do you feel about all these disc brake options these days?
Well, disc brakes, I love disc brakes for mountain bikes, of course, and I think they're really great for gravel, especially when conditions get a little bit muddy and when you've got your V brakes and whatnot, they can get real bogged down with mud if you're not careful. So the disc brakes kind of give you a little bit more flexibility with that. But then on the other hand, I've been to races where people have burned through brand new brake pads on their disc bikes. Just one race, muddy conditions. There go your pads, and you're rolling into the end of the race without any brakes. So I guess there's a a plus and minus to every side.
Yeah.
I'm not super convinced about disc for road. You know, I think that's sort of pushing it a little bit, in my opinion. But, I think they've got their place for sure.
Yeah, that's my opinion about disc for road. I'm not sure that it's necessary at this point. So
yeah.
I'm gonna take sort of a left turn and ask you, I don't know how long you've been in the bicycle industry or what kind of view you have of the bicycle industry, but do you see anything trending in frame design and componentry that is impacting or influencing your work in any way?
Yeah, it's a tough question for me because, as you said, I haven't had a lot of history with it, so it's hard to really pick out trends. Yeah, I see the do-everything bikes as being a really big trend that everyone is seeming to be really into, which I have kind of mixed feelings about. I sort of think if you want a road bike, let's just build you a really good road bike. Not a road bike, but it could also be a gravel bike, or it could also be a cyclocross bike, or, you know. But people are sort of seeming to want things that do multiple things.
Yeah, I don't see there is such a thing as an all-purpose bike, unless it's just your commuter, you know, the bike that you just hop on and go places. But I tend to agree with that. Are you doing anything outside of single bikes right now? Are you doing any tandems or anything unusual like that? Have you had any requests?
I've had a few requests about tandems. I would love to be able to do tandems, but at the moment it's just, you know, more tooling and more fixturing that I have to sort out. So it doesn't make sense for me to do it just yet, but in the future I would love to be able to. And the cargo bikes and, you know, things like that would be fun as well. But yeah, for now I'm just doing pretty basic road bikes, cross bikes, gravel bikes, mountain bikes.
How big is your space?
I'm working in the garage.
Aha. So,
and it's actually half of the garage. So it's pretty packed right now. Running out of room for machines, which is kind of sad, but it works.
Wow. What's your favorite machine?
Oh, my favorite machine is for sure my milling machine, because I just feel like it's magical. You know, I can make anything on that, and I love that.
You actually use the word magical more than once on your website, as I remember. Magical is magic. Well, I know you like things to be magical, I think.
I do. You're right.
I think that's a cool thing. I like magic. And bicycles are magical, I believe.
They are.
I believe.
Absolutely.
So what do you do when you're not working?
Frame building is a part-time gig for me at the moment, and I spend the other work time doing graphic design with my mother and her company. And then when I'm not doing that, I like to, you know, keep up to date with my drawing and stay creative that way, and go for bike rides when I can, be outside when I can. But, yeah, mostly I'm spending a lot of time frame building.
How'd you end up in Kansas?
It's just happened to be, so I needed to move, and I had moved to a whole bunch of places in the country throughout my life, and going places where I didn't know anyone. And I'd done that so many times that I just kind of, the prospect of it was somewhat exhausting to me. And my best friend from college, Melissa, lives in Kansas City. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go to Kansas City. I'll know one person. It's affordable. It's centrally located. It's kind of close to mountains, you know, within a day's drive to mountains, which is important to me. So those three things added up to me moving here.
Wow. So when you work with your mom, you're doing it like over the internet? She's not there.
No, she just moved to the Seattle area, gorgeous piece of land south of Seattle and Seabeck. And so, you know, when we were out there in Cleveland, we were talking, scheming to get me to out there. Which I would love to move there. It would be amazing.
Yeah, if the West Coast stays the West Coast, if it doesn't fall into the... Never mind, we won't have that conversation. So are you going to be going to NABS in 2019?
I don't think so. I went to Philly last year, and I'm on a every couple years show schedule.
Okay.
So I'm probably not going to do any shows this year, and if I do another show, it would either be Philly again, which I absolutely loved.
Me too.
Or go out to England for Bespoked.
Ooh, yeah, I just spoke to the guy from Bespoked not too long ago, and they just had that show, and I really didn't follow up with him. Did you? Well, you weren't there, were you?
No, I wish I could have been there.
Yeah. We are going back to Philly this year. We weren't there last year, but we are going back this year. We went to the Builders Ball last year. In New England.
How was that?
It was really interesting. It's small. It's very focused. It's in Boston. It was fun. It was a wonderful venue. You would have liked the venue. It's sort of like a big building that's full of design studios. It's really cool.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
That sounds
really
amazing.
Cool. Yeah, it is. So, you know, I have three questions that I ask all of my wonderful guests, and I need to ask them to you. What's your favorite food?
Okay, I've got two answers for this one.
Oh, good.
My favorite food to eat is probably steak, although I shouldn't eat it as often as I do, but I love it. And then my second favorite food, which is not really a food, it's more of a drink, is margaritas. So give me a stick and a margarita and I'm a happy girl.
Do you know that the best margaritas in the country, seriously, Brian and I have been everywhere, are right here in your hometown of Cleveland?
Stop.
Yes.
Well, you gotta tell me where they are.
At La Fiesta.
Okay.
At the corner of Richmond and Wilson Mills. So not even far from your grandparents. Not even far. And when you're in town, we will go have margaritas at La Fiesta. How cool is that?
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
That sounds amazing.
What kind of music do you like?
Oh, I have pretty eclectic tastes. I like a lot of different things, but lately I've in the studio I've been listening to the Apple Music radio stations, and I love the chill mix station. It's sort of ambient, kind of quiet, dreamy music that's a little bit magical. but if I'm needing some energy, then I'll put on anything by RuPaul. I absolutely love RuPaul, so it's always very motivating and inspiring to listen to RuPaul.
It's funny that you use the word chill, because on one of my Pandora. One of my Pandora stations is a chill station called Blank and Jones, and that's what I use in my yoga studio.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. So there. How about pets? Do you have any pets?
I have one cat. His name is Albert, and he was a stray, but he's amazing, and I love him to death.
Of course. Of course. What's your most current project? What are you working on right now?
Well, right now, actually, just when you called, I was working on doing some refinements to my dropout design, and then once that's done, I can change it so that it's a Nixtie dropout. I've got a client in LA who's ordered a Nixtie touring bike from me, so we're going to do custom dropouts, fancy lugs. It'll be really, really a super cool project.
What brakes are you going to use on that bike? Because I know Nixties can be sort of touchy with brakes in the back.
Yeah, he has a pair of the Marinovative Decelerator brakes. I've got them on my desk right now. They're very, very, very cool. So
that is cool. That is cool.
Yeah.
Well, tell my listeners how they can find out more about you and your work.
Okay. You can certainly go to my website. It's pedalinobicycles.com. And then I'm on Instagram and Facebook. I'm much more active on Instagram than I am on my website. So if you want to see what I'm doing on a day-to-day basis, that would be the one to follow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you've got a beautiful head badge that people can look at. And let's see, spray gunner. What the hell is that? I have no
idea.
That's
some paint.
Oh, it's paint, of course. Oh, you're
painting frames, and that's a new product I'm trying out.
You are painting your own frames?
I just started. So I'm doing a mix of powder coat, starting with a powder coat base. So all the hard stuff as far as prepping the frame is done. We've got a really solid base coat. And then I'm doing airbrush on top of it to embellish.
Well, airbrushing is an art. I know I had to take airbrush in art school, and I got okay with it, but not like you. I can say, if that's what this is, I totally get what you're doing. It is stunning. It's stunning. Yeah, your Instagram feed is beautiful. Well,
thank you.
This has just been so much fun. I'm so glad I got a chance to talk with you on our special show, our 400th show. I wish you so much luck. And next time you come to Cleveland, don't you dare come and not give me a call and let me know you're here.
Oh, you got it, girl.
All right.
We'll see you up for sure.
Okay. Have a great day and best
Thank
of
you.
Luck. All right. You take care.
Thank you so much, Dan.
You're
take
welcome.
Care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Julie Petalino joined me from her workshop in Lenexa, Kansas. If you enjoyed our conversation and you want to know more about her work, you can log on to pedalinobicycles.com. So let's take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to talk with Dr. Norman Howes about his long history with bicycles. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
You're listening to the station that is your home for college radio in Cleveland, 88.7 FM, WJCU, University Heights.
Thank you.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and it's off to Bloomington, Indiana, to speak with Dr. Norm House.
Hi, Norm. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Thank you very much, Diane.
You know, once again, my listeners find me the best guests, and your work and what you've been doing for the last, I don't even know how many years, is really exciting. I'm very glad to be able to talk with you today.
Thank you. Well, it's great to be here, and I hope we have an enjoyable next few minutes.
Yeah, I think we will do just fine. So tell us a little bit about your background, where you grew up, when you started bike racing, because you did, and how that's led to some of these other really interesting projects that you've been involved with over the years.
I grew up playing ball, football, basketball, baseball, grew up near Pittsburgh in Pennsylvania, and then moved out in my high school years to Indiana, and near Muncie, it was Harvard City, Indiana. And playing ball, that was just my only sports from all those different sports. And then I had a friend that said, my dad's starting up a bike trip, and he would like you to go. And I had seen a movie on the Wandering Wheels that was an inaugural type of group from Taylor University in Indiana that took college males on cross-country bicycle trips. And when I saw that, coming from a big family, never having traveled much anywhere, I said, I would love to do something like that. And so this parallel group started up where it was just high school males that would be accepted on this trip. And I signed up, and sure enough, when I got done with that bike trip, it was about a 3,000-mile bike trip in the summer between my sophomore and junior year of high school, I was hooked on cycling for a lot of different reasons. For the fitness, I was a beanpole, and it filled me out, gave me some muscles I didn't think I knew I had, and then it gave me this sense of adventure because, again, the only independence that I experienced as a kid was on a bicycle. My mom was not a soccer mom. When you have seven kids, you just say, hey, walk to where you need to go. You walk to the ball field, you walk to the bank. You walk, and then we walked and got tired of that, and we asked, could we ride our bike? And she said yes, and we never walked again. So that started my biking thing that was beyond being a paper boy or, you know, delivering paper with your bike or something like that. It was now an adventure. And I went on six of those through my high school and college years. And just naturally, because you ride that far, 3,000 and 4,000 miles over a 5 or 6 week period, you're going to be asked to race on a biking team. And that's what I was asked to do in college, and fortunately ended up on a good team that won a couple races in a row. And then I was hooked on racing. So I graduated from college, went on to professional school. I'm a chiropractic physician with specialties in functional medicine and acupuncture, and came to Bloomington, Indiana, started up a family, started a practice, and lo and behold, right here in Bloomington is one of the most premier bicycle races in college in the United States, if not one of the coolest races in the whole wide world, and that's the Little 500. And now it's past the time where I would ride in something like that, but being in my mid-20s, I was asked by one team member, to coach a team. So I actually coached a team on the last race on the old track in Little Five at Indiana University. And I have since, in the last 38 years, coached 51 teams, both male and female. I've had six that have won the race. I've had a lot that have lost the race. And so that's my racing and coaching experience. I was in the, also myself, when I was racing in college, I went on to the Nationals Road Racing Championships in 1974. But going on to professional school, learning how to be a doctor, that pretty much put away my own racing pursuits. And just basically now I'm still coaching teams in Little Five and enjoying it and getting a lot out of it. I'm the main beneficiary. All these teams, they come and go, but I'm the same one that still stays there. What's not fair is every year the average age of the team is 19, 20, 21 years old, but I get 8 years older every year.
Yeah, I don't know how that happens.
Yeah, you don't know how that happens. So what happens is when I go out and ride with them, they want to impress me, of course, and I got to remind them I'm three times their age.
Right.
By this time.
Right.
So I just tell them, hey, I'll go out with you on your easy days. But
right.
Monroe County, where Indiana University is one of the best cycling counties to be in. There's so many networks of roads here that the students just love it to ride here. Back in when my kids were teenagers, I got to thinking about, gee, would it be great for my daughters to be on a long-distance bicycle trip that I went on when I was a kid? That would be very cool. And so we started up in 1996 our own fledgling program called Decycles. And it was, I named it after the same name of the group that I went on when I was a teenager. My daughters did not want to go.
Of course not.
It didn't sound like fun to them. Their idea of fun was a sleepover. Their idea of fun was going to the Dairy Queen. And they were semi-athletic, but not hugely so. I forced them to go on this trip, and we did a trip from Michigan to New York City. And I, as a parent, was very nervous, my wife also, about this breakaway that our daughters were going through, going on this bike trip, and they really didn't want to go. When they returned, as soon as they returned, they saw us and ran over to us, just about knocked us over, and said, we can't wait to go next year.
That's cool.
And that pretty much birthed the program here that we have in Bloomington, Indiana, called Decycles. And we're now on our 25th trip and ready to take a trip from Bloomington to the East Coast this year, where last year we took a trip from L.A. to Bloomington. So that was 2,000 miles. And for anybody on that trip, and this upcoming trip, it will constitute a cross-country bicycle trip before you graduate from high school. That's pretty nifty.
That is. Let me take a moment to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Norm Howes. It's Dr. Norm Howes now. Back in the day, he was probably just Norm, right?
I was just Norm. That's right.
Yeah. But so I want to back up a little.
Norm.
Yeah, right. It's not like that's changed. I want to back up a little bit about these students, your winning teams. I know this is going to sound really weird, but because I'm such a huge Breaking Away fan, and anybody who's seen the movie had to be rooting for the Cutters, right? Not for the college students, or I should say the Greeks, but the Cutters. Were any of your teams Cutter teams?
No, they were always my arch enemy.
Oh, no, Norm!
I was the team that was going against the Cutters.
Nice, nice. Well, in Breaking Away.
Yeah, if you're a moviegoer and you love the Cutters, great. But, you know, if you're not a moviegoer and you're everybody else and you're all this other competition, you don't like the Cutters.
So let's talk a little bit.
They're a very successful organization, and they do very well. In fact, they won the race this past year.
I got it. When does that race occur each year?
It's always the third weekend in April, which is 2 weeks before school's
out. Oh, so they just had that race. Cool.
So let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Dr. Norm Howes about Decycles and the 2018 American Rivers trip. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit doddcamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
to DeCycles. This year, the event is called DeCycles American Rivers 2018. And looking at the website, how many rivers are you going to actually either cross or ride by or visit? It looks like a gazillion.
There's 11 big rivers and then a whole bunch of smaller ones, but and that's why we call it the American Rivers, because we're trying to follow these rivers, which in the beginning of our country, that's how our country started, is the river flow and the commerce and transportation was over water. So first is the Ohio River and the Kanawha River. We're actually going to whitewater raft, a new river, if you've ever been on that one. That's a very exciting whitewater rafting river.
Well, it's interesting you bring up the new river because a couple of weeks ago I spoke with Kim Perry, who is the ride director for Bike Virginia, and that ride this year happens to be following, quote unquote, the new river. So it's like I've heard that river now twice in 2 weeks, which is really interesting. So you're going to take the whole group on a whitewater rafting trip.
Yeah, that day we only have 40 or 45 or 50 miles to do. So we're going to get in by noon. The rafting company's going to pick us up and we're going to do a rafting trip down the river. And in this case, we're not riding along the river. We are actually on the river,
right?
Rafting it. So that'll be fun. We try to get every trip that we do, try to have something that pulls us off the bicycle and gets us away from the monotony of long distance bike riding. So, every year there's something. Like, we're going to be visiting the White House and the U.S. Capitol this year. Last year we hit a couple of water parks and the Grand Canyon and various places along the way. We will stop and take advantage of being there.
So you actually go along with these riders?
I sure do. My wife and I are riding right along with them. And if you saw the videos,
I'm the
videographer. So I'm carrying a camera sometimes. I've probably ridden a bike more with a camera in my hand than anybody in this country.
Well, let me ask you about the distances. We've got young riders, probably teenagers, and maybe some who have not ridden at all. How long does it usually take them to acclimate to riding these distances? Because you need to cover a lot each day if you're going to make up 2,100 miles in 3 weeks.
DeCycles starts their training in late March, and at that time it seems like the trip is really far away, and yet it's right around the corner. So we'll start in late March, and that can be very, very cold in the Midwest. Just starting riding in the neighborhood, especially if they're brand new. Now, we got rookie riders, we got veteran riders. So the veteran riders have already gone through this, but it's the newbies that start out, and they get trained by myself and other people that have been on our adult volunteer staff, and we train them where we start coming out of the neighborhoods. Once I'm confident that they know how to steer a bike and brake it, meaning stopping,
right,
and not breaking the actual bike, so that I can feel confident that they'll be safe out on the road. Then once we do that, we start increasing the miles. We'll have daily rides. Like right now, we're in the middle of May and we're doing 25-mile evening rides. And it's nice because we're on daylight savings, so the sun doesn't go down till way later. And they'll do 20 miles or so from Tuesday till Thursday. And then on Saturday, like tomorrow, we have a 60-mile ride. We call it Tour de Subway because we have about 5 or 6 neighboring towns that are about 30, 40 miles away, and they all have a subway, so that's where we go for lunch. We go there to have lunch, and then we'll come back, and that usually ends up being a 65 or 70-mile ride. Then we will have a ride. We will have longer rides in June. We'll actually ride from Bloomington to Louisville and back. That's 100 miles down and 100 miles back.
Right.
So we encourage everybody to try to get that so that they're ready for the bike trip. Because last year, the longest distance they did in one day is 238 miles.
So holy
smokes!
So that's
a double century plus. And the lightest day, I think, was 40 miles. So they have to get into the physical and mental discipline of achieving this. This isn't something that you sign up for 2 weeks before and say, gee, I'd like to go on a bike trip.
Right.
They have to prepare, and they have to think ahead. and not too many. I mean, we had a couple people this year already quit before they even started because they like to see the movie. They hear about it from their friends, and it all sounds good, but there's no pain or training associated with that until they have to get on the bike, and they go up against the wind up a hill, and that's when they finally say, I think this is taking on too much commitment. But that's very rare. Most of the time, we're getting these kids that are pretty cool. They're high achievers, and they're showing up, and we assure them every day you're getting stronger and stronger and stronger. By the time you're on the track, you're going to be ready.
Where are these kids coming from? Where do you get your riders?
Most of them are coming from our area, Bloomington or Monroe County. Of course, we've got some little five racers. They like to go on a trip in the summer because now they're not racing anymore, but they need to stay in shape for the next year. And the best way to do that in summer is base miles, just distance.
Right. Right.
But that gets old after a while if you're just by yourself. Why wouldn't you want to go on a cycle trip with 40, 50, 60, 70 other people, have a great time, see a bunch of things, and still crank out 100 miles a day? That's a way better way of training than, you know, going all by yourself. So
yeah.
They're coming from the central Indiana area in Bloomington, but then every once in a while we'll get somebody off the internet. They'll out of nowhere just call us up. In fact, you might, as you air this over radio or wherever you're putting this, we might have somebody call and say, man, I need my kid to go on that thing.
Right, exactly. What a great experience for a young person to take. I remember when I was 18, you know, I went on one of those proverbial university European tours, which was it was really fluffy. You know, we're looking at something really achieving here. I really like what these kids have to do. Who does all this planning for securing overnights and food and mapping the course? And I know how much effort it takes to put one of these events together.
Mapping the course is done by our map man. We call him Map Man. My younger brother.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, Map Man. Yes, happens to be my younger brother, Robin. So it's Map Man and Robin. and it used to be the old-fashioned way, old school. It used to be you get the maps out, and you just got to print out all the maps to be just the way they're supposed to be. Today, now we got Ride with GPS, and everybody with their smartphone has every turn dictated to them so that it's an audible cue, turn left on First Street, that's what it'll tell you, and that's what you do. So that's really nice. He does that. But at first, in January, we come up with what route do you want to do. And this route this year was specifically picked to make it appear like it's a cross-country achievement for anybody who went on the trip last year.
Got it.
So that all they're doing is they can say, maybe they didn't do it all in 1 year, but they can say, I've ridden a bicycle from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Sure.
So what we need to do when we map early on in the year, like in January, we need to figure out where we're going, where we're going to start, where we're going to end. Then we got to figure out every single stop, every night. So how far can that be? Can it be 200 miles? Well, the reason why it was 200 miles last year, 238 to be exact, was because there was nothing in between. And so that's just what you have to do when you're out west. So we like to make it about 85, 90, 95 miles, 100 miles. If you get over that, it just takes a long time.
Right.
To finally get in. You might not get in until 8:30 at night.
Or a day.
So we have to determine how far each night will be, and then we pick the place, the town we're going to be. And then my wife, she's the one who gets on the internet, tries to find a church, a school, a YMCA that looks like it might be on our route. She emails them, then calls them. And some of them are tough, like New York City's going to be tough. We still don't have a place there, and Washington, D.C. But we've got most of the other towns securing that, and these churches are awesome. They'll say, sure, we'll take you in. My wife is taking care of that. And then we have a big group of annual volunteers. They just keep coming back, and that helps make things go a lot smoother. So we couldn't do it by ourselves. We didn't have 50, 60, 70. We've even had as many as 80 teenagers on this bike tour.
How many are going this year?
We have about 40, so we're kind of in an off year. We've had a lot of cancellations because of schedule conflicts and injuries and things like that. So that always happens where we're like airlines. We'll overbook, and then there will be some people that apply back in January or February, and now it's May, and it's getting closer, and there's more reality there, and so maybe they just might not go for some reason. But this year is probably going to be the smallest roster we've had in many years. So we have open spots.
Okay.
If anybody would want to go, and if they're athletic or if they are a cyclist, adult or student, we'll take them.
Got it. So what do you do with your practice for those 3 or 4 weeks? I mean, do you just close it and take vacation? What do your patients do?
I've had people ask that. In fact, my colleagues say, doesn't that cost a lot of money? And I say, yeah, it does. But the last thing I'm going to say on my deathbed is I wish I would have worked another day in the office. I love what I do. I should not do this if I didn't have an associate to cover me during that time.
We need to wrap it up, unfortunately, but tell us how people can find out more about the trip, especially since there are openings this year.
Everything is on the website, decyclesindiana.org.
Say it again.
And Decycles is spelled D-E-C-Y-C-L-E-S. The cost is almost a giveaway.
Yeah, you know, I looked at it. It is extremely reasonable. And to spend that much time and have that much assistance and support for that, you know, for this kind of an event, I think it's a real bargain. So once again, it is disciplesindiana.org. We've been speaking with Norm House. I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. I know you have patients waiting for you. So good luck on the ride this year. And is there a way we can follow along while you're on the ride? Do you actually post stuff as you go?
Yes, we have a Facebook page.
We'll find it and we'll post it on our site. Well, Norm, thanks so much for talking with me. And I want to thank your friend, Michael Cameron, for kind of turning me on to the whole thing that you do. I appreciate it.
Well, great. Diane, it's been great talking with you, and good luck in your show.
Thanks. We'll talk again. Have a great trip this year. Bye-bye. Norm House joined me from Bloomington, Indiana, to talk about Decycles Indiana and all the work he's done over the years. I'm sorry for some of the audio problems. It seems that these days everybody has a cell phone. Not too many people have landlines anymore, so we do the best we can.
So that's our show for this week. Many thanks to frame builder Julie Petalino and to Dr. Norm House for joining me for this 400th episode of The Outspoken Cyclist. Next week's show will be an encore presentation so that Brian and I can travel to Canal Winchester for the TOSRV Expo. This year's event has a new date and a new starting place. And if you're there to pick up your ride packet, we hope you'll take a moment and stop by and say hello. So thank you so much for listening. Stay safe out there. And remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.